Welcome to Chip Chat, an interview series that connects you with technology experts around the issues that industry is focused on today. And now your host, Allison Klein.
Welcome to Chip Chat. My name's Allison Klein. Today I'm with Greg Pfister. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you.
So, Greg, why don't you tell us a little bit about your past and where you are today?
Okay. A few years ago, I retired from IBM, having been there for 31 years as a distinguished engineer. Since then, aside from things like paying for my daughter getting married and moving from Texas to Colorado, I've been starting to write a blog, which is not quite updated as often as I would like in the recent past, called Perils of Parallel. And also part-time research scholar at Colorado State University. Go up there about once a week to harass graduate students.
So the perils of parallel, we'll get there in a second. You wrote me an email about the interview topic, and you started with a comment, futurists give me hives.
Yes, most of them do.
What frustrates you with prognostications about the future, and especially related to computing?
Mostly, the thing that gets me itching inside my head the most is an implicit assumption in many cases that everything changes at the same rate, and Moore's Law in particular. I've got a different take on this. I finally figured out this is what was bothering me a little while ago, that there are multiple timescales involved. Key example I like for the Moore's Law side is I have this neat light switch. It turns lights on at dusk and will turn them off at dawn. You program in your latitude and longitude, and it figures out when the sun is going to rise and fall. And it works. I've had it for over a year. It's advanced and decreased, you know, multiple hours total in the year. And this used to be something that people used roomful computers to do back in the Paleolithic age of computing, back in the 50s and thereabouts. And so you can say, well, gee, isn't it wonderful? Moore's Law put this in a light switch. My reaction is, yeah, now we can do exactly the same thing, but just smaller. So I think what Moore gets you is more of the same.
Well, it seems like what you're saying is that the computational power is there, but unless we push our own technologies in different realms forward, we're using it in ways that may not be pushing the entire computing experience forward.
The computing experience for me is Moore's Law. The other things are advances in science, and the other one is the Brownian motion of a million programmers. The science, you know, you can't do something on a computer until you know what it is you're going to do. Moore's Law is never going to get us artificial intelligence because we don't know what it means and we don't know how to do it. Once we figure out how to do it, then, okay, now we can talk about what we need in terms of compute power to make it work. Mm-hmm. And science in general marches at its own pace. It's not a Moore's Law-driven thing. They're completely decoupled. And then the other one is that you have this mass of people out there who will just figure out how to do almost anything on almost anything as long as they know what to do with it. And if you start off with a blank paper and a smart person and start from scratch, you can get all kinds of things done. But this is really, you know, how somebody decides what to do and where it comes from and where, you know, what ones will win and what ones will lose, I can't think of as anything other than Brownian motion, just, you know, little dots of attempts banging around, and sooner or later, one of them goes through a hole and becomes a success. Time scale on that is completely random.
So let's go back to parallelism for a second.
Okay.
If you were entering into the world of computer programming today, and we're looking at parallelism and the opportunities of parallelism, where can we drive actual benefit to experience or insight?
First of all, doing any of that is going to be difficult. Parallel programming, and this is something that I've had some experience in for about 20 years, is just very difficult. What saves us is that an awful lot of problems are embarrassingly parallel, by which I mean many, many things going on at the same time and they don't have to talk to one another at all, don't have any synchronization need whatsoever. So if I were starting out right now trying to do software in that area, what I would really try to do is scratch my head and think of frameworks. into which people can put pieces that they write in serial code and just have those be done. The paradigm in the back of my head is spreadsheets. Things like spreadsheets enabled anybody to do things that were really interesting computations without thinking they were programming. It was related to an existing paradigm that they knew, and they could extend it, and it was great, and it took off. Are there things like that in parallelism? You know, MapReduce, as in Google and as in Hadoop, is one kind of example. That's really a batch thing, though, and a lot of these might be interactive. I'm not sure that's going to cover everything, but it's one, and we need a few more.
So you mentioned MapReduce and Hadoop and large unstructured data sets. What type of influence will these large unstructured data sets have, do you think, on enterprise or HPC, these new concepts coming out of web-scale computing?
I don't really know. You know, that is somewhat in the Brownian motion range for me.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I will say is that something that doesn't come up is the problem of just dealing with the data. There is someone I know, heard a presentation from at Colorado State University, who was comparing genomes. He was doing it on viruses, and I'm glad he's in a separate lab because he said most of the things he deals with have a 3 or 4 day lethality. And his problem is not the computing. His issue is he has nowhere near enough room for the data. He throws the data away.
Interesting.
And if he needs to do it again, he sequences the genome again. That only takes a day. He has neither the storage nor the to keep it nor the bandwidth to send it someplace else, so he deletes it. He's deleting petabytes of data a week.
Well, give the audience some hope, Craig. Where are we going that might actually solve this?
As time goes on, sooner or later, I think the genomic thing will slow down just because nobody will need to make that many genome sequences after you reach some threshold, which will be way higher than what we have now, and give the storage industry a chance to catch up.
Well, Greg, where can people follow you if they want to keep up with this conversation?
Let's see. I'm on Twitter as Greg Pfister. There's my blog, Perils of Parallel, which is on Blogspot if you search for it. And if you Google my name, I don't go by wacko strange names on the web. I'm just Greg Pfister everywhere. there is another Greg Pfister who apparently sells some very well-selling children's book. He writes them. That's not me.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the program today.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Visit ChipChat online at intel.com/design/chipchat.htm.